listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The Pope comes out with his new Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel. I'm sure I'm mangling his Latin, but I actually had 2 years of Latin. It's pretty straightforward language. Anyhow, he says that, quote, the earnings of a minority are growing exponentially. So, too, is the gap separating the majority from the prosperity enjoyed by those happy few. He calls for more politicians who are genuinely disturbed by the state of society, the people and the lives of the poor, and for a commitment of political and financial leaders to ensure that all citizens have dignified work, education, and health care. Sounds like FDR, right? Make the government the employer of last resort. He says our economic systems will devour everything which stands in the way of increased profits. Whatever is fragile, like the environment, is defenseless before the interests of a deified market. The commandment, thou shalt not kill, today we also have to say thou shalt not to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Such an economy kills. How can it be that it is not a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure, but it is a news item when a stock market loses 2 points? Pope Francis, I'm seriously thinking of becoming Catholic. I'm telling you. Peter Schiff is on the line with us. Conservative libertarian financial advisor, host and author of the Peter Schiff Radio Show, Schiff Radio, that's with two F's, schiffradio.com is the website. Peter, welcome.
Yes.
So what would, you know, in the at least in the mind of Pope Francis, what would Jesus do to the banksters?
Well, you know that old joke about, I don't know, maybe it's just an expression, you know, does a pope, you know what, in the woods? Maybe we could change it to, does, you know, well, actually, it would be the opposite. You know, does the Pope not understand economics? Or I don't know, maybe it's not the right thing. Cause,
I think you're mixing up bears and popes.
Yeah, or Pope, whatever it is. Yeah, Pope, yeah. Is the Pope Catholic? Yeah, yeah, well, whatever it is. But he doesn't understand anything.
Well, I think this Pope economics. Is Catholic, and I think he's calling for an economic system worldwide that comports with the Gospels.
Well, you know, what really does is free market capitalism. And if the Pope understood economics, and even if he read even in the Bible, I mean, you know, and I'm not going to quote chapter and verse, but what lifts people out of poverty is capitalism, is freedom, not government. All the societies where government has tried to eradicate poverty, poverty has gone up, including here in America, where, you know, we declared
war
in the 1960s and poverty won.
That's simply not true. When Lyndon Johnson did his Great Society, the poverty rate in the United States was cut in half over a 5-year period.
No, we have
and Franklin Roosevelt put people to work and said the government is going to be the employer of last resort. He cut the unemployment rate in the United States from almost 30% down to 14% in less than five years.
We didn't eradicate poverty. In fact, if you go back to the Statue of Liberty, right, when we were asking the world or beckoning the poor people from around the world to come to America, poor people left Europe to come to America, even though we had no welfare programs, no food stamps, no socialized health care. We gave the poor people of the world nothing except freedom and opportunity.
We had an amazing amount of land and free resources that we had stolen from Indians who had occupied it for 20,000 years, Peter.
No, we had an absence of government. We had capitalism.
No, we had a vast continent of natural resources unlike Europe, which had already been staked out by Europeans, that was easily stolen from the people who had been living on it for 20,000 years. That's what we had.
No, we had freedom. We had
freedom to kill Indians.
Regulation. That's what unleashed it. There was plenty of land. I mean, look, you don't tell me there was Russia, the Soviet Union was the breadbasket of Europe. I mean, there's plenty of land over there. I mean, what we had here was limited government. That's what made America thrive, not the fact that we have resources. Look at all the resources in Africa. Africa's got a ton of resources. You know, why didn't they thrive? You know, it's because of the limited.
I would suggest you read King Leopold's Ghost, Peter. I would suggest you educate yourself about the history of colonialism in Africa if you want to ask that question anything other than rhetorically. There actually are specific answers for that. I've worked in Africa. I was in Uganda during the war with Idi Amin. I've been in Darfur. I've been in South Sudan. I've been in Kenya. I've spent a lot of time in Africa, and I can tell you, the echoes of colonial rule in Africa are just as real as the echoes of 400 years of slavery and 100 years of apartheid in the United States.
Look at places like Hong Kong or Singapore, countries that had no natural resources whatsoever, but their standard of living skyrocketed because they have freedom.
Not for the poor. Have you been to Hong Kong? Have you been to Hong Kong, Peter?
Yes.
Have you walked through the slums?
There are more poor people in America. Do you have any idea how many poor people are in America right now?
There's a mind-boggling number of people in the slums in Hong Kong. Hong Kong, you know, Singapore and the United States are the two most unequal countries in the world among the OECD countries.
We are the two countries
that have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor and the smallest middle class relative to that gap between the rich and the poor. And it's because of this free market capitalism that you're preaching.
No, we don't have free market capitalism. If we did, we wouldn't have that big gap. We have anything but free market capitalism in America.
So tell me how this is going to work. How is this going to work, Peter? Back in the 1790s, you had John Rockefeller, back when we had free market capitalism, colluding with the railroads to refuse to carry his competitors' products. So he was running his competitors out of business, and he was building.
Maybe the 1890s, not the 1790s.
Yeah, 1890s, but. Thank you. And he was colluding with the railroads to refuse to carry his competitors' oil products and kerosene to market.
John D. Rockefeller did more to eradicate poverty than Roosevelt and all these do-gooders. I mean, what he did was bring down the cost of energy, the cost of kerosene, gas.
And in the process, he put hundreds of small business people, thousands of small business people out of work and created a mind-boggling fortune for himself.
All of his customers benefited. All these so-called robber barons, the guys that pioneered American industry, what they did is they brought down cost of production. They passed on the lower cost.
But they weren't doing it in anything that resembles a free market, Peter.
Yes, they were doing it in a way that was
crony capitalism, collusion.
What we have is crony capitalism now. You know, you had some of their competitors who could not compete.
Give me one example of one industry that you would change and how you would change it so it becomes, quote, free market.
Oh, almost all of them.
No, just give me one example. Let's make this real. Give me one example of one industry that you would change so that it is, quote, free market, end quote. How would you change it? What's the industry?
Okay, we'll start with housing, okay? Get the government out of housing. Get rid of Fannie Mae. Get rid of Freddie Mac. So there's no
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are already largely gotten rid of.
No, they're not. They're guaranteeing all the mortgages. Get rid of the FHA. Get the government out of the housing market. Get the government out of the health care market. Get rid of Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, all kinds of government.
So to hell with poor people, basically, and to hell with anybody who wants to.
To hell with poor people. Poor people had better access to medical care before the government got involved. Health care was a lot less expensive before the government ran up the price in the 1960s. Nobody in this country, my father, grew up in the 1930s. He had seven or eight kids, brothers. His parents were immigrants. They were, his dad was a carpenter. Nobody ever worried about health care because doctors were cheap.
I remember the 1960s and 1970s. I was doing business in Michigan in the 1970s, which was an extension of the 1930s, the Roosevelt laws that said it was a felony. It was against the law in every state in the union to run a health insurance company on a for-profit basis. That all changed with the Reagan Revolution in the 80s. And if you look at a graph, you will see that's when the price of health care exploded, into health care.
Profits are what keep prices low. It's not the other way around.
Nope.
Where you have profits, you have low prices.
Then how is it that Stephen Hemsley makes over $1 billion as the CEO of United Healthcare?
Because he must look. Well, healthcare is not a.
It's because he's a parasite. He's a bankster.
Right now that the government's not in, but profits keep prices low because business.
Profits don't keep prices low. Competition keeps prices low.
Right, but you have to have a profit to stay in business.
No, you don't. You can have competition in a nonprofit market. We did for 50 years in the United States. Shift Radio, SHIFFradio.com. Stick around, Peter.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Peter Schiff, the host of the Peter Schiff Radio Show. Thank you, Peter, for dropping by. Peter?
Yeah.
Thank you. Good talking with you. Well, that was a fun way to start an hour. Good night. get the government out of health care. Yeah, right. What was it? The Ron Paul was asked, you know, what would you do? You know, 30-year-old, he doesn't have health insurance. He's laying on the street out in front of the hospital. Let him die! Yeah, right. Amazing. Brandon in Riverside, California. Hey, Brandon, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching.
Hello, Tom.
Excuse me. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Am I on? Oh, thank you. Well, I was calling because I've been watching your show for quite a while now. I'm starting to, you know, I've only been interested in politics for about a year since those elections. And what I've kind of gotten a grasp on so far is that we're sort of like set up in a system of cynicism. Like you have two business owners. One of them is like the Koch brothers and the other one, maybe he has a conscience, but if he doesn't screw people like the Koch brothers do, he gets out competed.
Right.
Just wondering what you know.
Well, this is why if you're going to have a capitalist system, it works best, and history clearly shows this, unless you're a shill for billionaires. I mean, you know, unless your entire point of view is what's best for billionaires, a capitalist system works best when it's regulated, when there are rules for the game. I mean, it's the same with football or baseball. I mean, you wouldn't want a football game or a baseball game that has no rules. You wouldn't want a free market football game, you know, where whichever team had the most money could define how tall the goalposts are or where they were. Or what, you know, hey, let's move the goalposts to the 20-yard line. We'll toss an extra, you know, $50,000 in to make that happen. Whose referees are on which, you know, all this stuff, this stuff about the free market. This is a bunch of nonsense. I mean, it's just an absolute bunch of nonsense. And so I think what you're describing, Brandon, is this so-called, you know, and we have way too much of it, frankly, so-called free market capitalist system. And not only that, we've got a bunch of welfare queens in the middle of it. Bill Gates would not be a multimillionaire right now, but he would not be a multi-billionaire if it wasn't for copyright laws. He's using copyright laws. He's using, you know, government welfare basically to become a billionaire and to produce a fairly mediocre product at that. You know, can you imagine how much better Windows would be if Bill Gates actually had to compete with somebody or at least Microsoft? It's nuts. But you wanted to talk about the influence of the super wealthy. Was that your point?
Yeah, it's pretty much that. I feel like, is there, like, maybe not all of the super rich actually spend money on in like super PACs and stuff and try to keep the laws the way they are, but it seems like the majority of them do, and there's more money going that direction in America.
Yeah. And this then leads us to a system, you know, where Peter says we have crony capitalism. Well, there actually is a lot of truth to that, but absolutely unregulated free market capitalism is, you know, inevitably leads to crony capitalism because the so-called free market allows you to define your own rules. I mean, somebody has to define the rules of the marketplace. I guess my second question to Peter should have been, please show me a market that is absolutely free. And there is none. There is none. Brandon, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. People just, you know, people don't understand capitalism. Anyway, it's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. So 1 week from today, by the way, I think last week while I was on the road, I said it was going to be this week. And I was, well, you know how I am with time. I, you know, half the time I literally do not know what day of the week it is. I just have never been able to figure out time. I can figure out minutes and hours, but days, months, sometimes years. I get years wrong sometimes. It's incredible. Anyway, that part of my brain just never developed. I guess some other part took it over. Maybe the part that understands capitalism. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-987-THOM is our telephone number. Bernie Sanders, I get his the Bernie buzz. I got his newsletter. Senator Sanders applauds Pope Francis's call to rein in the tyranny of capitalism. Senator Bernie Sanders today applauded Pope Francis's recent papal announcement, which condemns the new tyranny of unrestrained capitalism, causing income inequality and poverty, and calling on leaders to curb the absolute, these are the Pope's words, the absolute autonomy of the marketplace and financial speculation and instead act for the common good. This is the Catholic Church that I learned about when I was a kid. This was the Father Berrigan Catholic Church. This was the activist Catholic Church. This was the Catholic Church that had always been, or not always, but largely, certainly in my lifetime, had more often than not been at the front of progressive social change, of protecting the defenseless, defending the defenseless, protecting the earth and the people in it. Anyhow, get your thoughts on this. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
All right, Tom. You know, you really can't assign a lot of credibility to Peter Schiff when he doesn't know which animal does his business in the woods and which one is Catholic.
People mix those two metaphors up intentionally so often that I think that, you know, it's become a cliche.
Well, okay, we'll give it a pass. But this idea that the free market exists in a vacuum is nonsense. And I want to weave a couple of Supreme Court cases together to make a point.
Okay.
You're familiar with the Lochner versus New York case in 1905,
yes,
which the Supreme Court struck down. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was the Bakers. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. We're essentially the state of New York was trying to create a hourly regulation on bakers in the state of New York. Basically, it's the beginning of wage and hour regulation.
Right.
And the court struck that law down with this idea that there's freedom of contract and liberty to contract, and this is the free marketplace.
Right.
And all of this. And
just refresh my memory, Paul, because I know that you're much more of a scholar of the court than I am. Wasn't it something like the 50-hour work week, basically, that, you know, for bakers that got struck down?
60 hours a week, no more than 60 hours a week 60. Or 10 hours a day. So basically 6 10-hour days.
Yeah.
If you're not working enough, if that's not enough, apparently the Supreme Court didn't think so, that's not too much work. And that's all the state of New York was doing, was saying you can't work more than 10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Right.
Okay. That's the beginning of it. And in the dissenting opinion, Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote that the Constitution is not intended to embody a particular economic theory. Okay.
Now,
at that time, the average lifespan of an American was 47 and a half years at 1900.
Yeah.
By 1950, it had gone to 65.
Right, largely because of better hygiene, mostly associated with public sanitation and with childbirth.
Of the workplace and of public health.
Right.
Okay, now two other opinions I want to go quickly here with this is...
Sure.
Plessy versus Ferguson, which was the separate but equal decision.
Right, 1890.
Right, and that was overturned in 1954 with Brown versus Board of Education.
Right,
and then Adkins versus Children's Hospital, which was the first minimum wage law, was struck down. It was a D.C. law that set a minimum wage in 1923, was struck down by the court, but overturned in 1937 with West Coast Hotels versus Parrish out here in Wenatchee, Washington, in which the Washington State minimum wage law was upheld.
Right, and it was only upheld because the Supreme Court suddenly started changing their tune because just months earlier, President Roosevelt had threatened to take all the Supreme Court justices over 70 and aggregate them into one vote.
That's true, but also the court was realizing that we were in a recession or in a deep depression and that the states were allowed to regulate their own economies to make things better. Now, to rush forward in a different case, it was, because I want to cite Sandra Day O'Connor's opinion. In 1992, it was an abortion case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey in Pennsylvania, and this was one of the feared that Roe would be overturned. Sandra Day O'Connor wrote this. There were two cases in which there were compelling reasons to overturn the court's previous decision. Plessy versus Ferguson and Adkins versus Children's Hospital.
Hmm.
So in other words, she said it was as compelling to overturn separate but equal as it was to establish a minimum wage.
Wow.
But the Roe decision does not rise to that level. That's what she wrote.
Wow.
So go ahead, Peter Schiff, and tell me that a conservative justice like Sandra Day O'Connor doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah. Well, I think the larger issue, Paul, is anybody who uses the phrase free market does not know what they're talking about. Because there's no such thing. It's like, you know, let's have a free football game. Really?
It doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in a society.
Yeah, well, and marketplaces are created by society. Somebody has to create the currency and regulate its value. Somebody has to create the laws, you know, of you know, what means what. You know, if it's even as simple as you wash my car, I mow your lawn, and that's the extent of our transaction. And we call that a free market because we're doing it barter. What happens if in washing your car, I smash in the fender by accident, you know, or even intentionally? You know, you have to have a court system to litigate these things. All of these things have to exist. You can't have a functional marketplace. I mean, anyway. Paul, thank you very much for the call. It's always a pleasure to talk Supreme Court with you. And great for you. Thank you very much. Good on you for listening to KBCS. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Can anybody give me an example of any time in any country in history when there was a, quote, free market, end quote? Good, the bad, and the very, very pignorantly ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good, Prince George's County, Maryland. That county's governing council recently approved a measure that will make renewable energy a permanent part of the area's power supply. From now on, every new county building will have to get 1 kilowatt of energy from renewable sources like wind, solar, and geothermal for every 1,000 square feet it occupies. Prince George's County, PG County, as it's called by locals, is the first county anywhere in the United States to pass any law requiring the use of clean energy in public spaces. PG County is also right outside of Washington, D.C. So maybe, just maybe, its renewable energy makeup will be a wake-up call to our elected representatives on Capitol Hill that now is the time to make a serious commitment to clean power before global warming permanently changes the planet for the worse. The bad. The Weld County Sheriff's Office. Earlier this month, the office charged Taylor Radig with misdemeanor animal abuse. Radig worked as a temporary employee from September through July at the Quanah Cattle Company in Kersey, Colorado. According to the sheriff's office, was an active participant in some of the company's awful calf, that is, as in baby cow, abuse. So the short story should end there, right? Wrong. Radig is a member of the animal rights group Compassion Over Killing and was working undercover at the Colorado farm to try to expose the very abuses she's been charged with. But the Weld County Sheriff's Office doesn't care. It says that Radig's failure to report the alleged abuse of the animals in a timely manner adheres to the definition of acting with negligence and substantiates the charge. Basically, Weld County is punishing Radig because it wants to intimidate other people from doing what she did, expose the cruelties of the meat industry. And the very, very ugly Everest Wilhelmsen. The leader of the Christian American Patriot Militia finds himself in hot water this week after he made a Facebook post threatening the life of President Obama. Wilhelmsen wrote, "We now have authority to shoot Obama, that is to kill him. His willful violations and alienation of our Constitution, constant disregard for our peaceful protests, and corruption of all of the three branches of government, i.e. rogue and illegitimate government, reveal the dictator that he is. Obama and his co-conspirators disrespect our Constitution, constitutional rule of law, and abuse the American people." Right. I hate to break it to Mr. Wilhelmsen, but there is no constitutional right to murder. That he'd even think so is just very, very ugly. Bizarre, actually. I mean, I think it goes a little beyond ugly. Oh, Rick Scott down in Florida. Guess what? New voter restrictions. Yes, there's an election coming up, and it looks like it's going to be a toss-up between a Democrat and a Republican. So Rick Scott says you can no longer drop off your ballots at the post office and all these other places where you used to be able to drop them off. You now have to come right to the Board of Elections and hand them in. And for some people, that's like, you know, a 30-mile drive, maybe a 50-mile drive, maybe a 100-mile drive, whatever. Or you can mail it in, but, you know, not everybody has the right postage or an envelope or whatever. So it's the Republican way, right? Voter suppression. I mean, you know, it's always been the Republican way. Surprise, surprise. Joe in Gibson, Iowa. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Sioux City, Iowa, actually. But I just wanted to comment on, it just seems the willful ignorance of modern conservatism. Mr. Schiff that was on earlier, you know, having no understanding of what the free market is and what role government plays in regulating markets, from the idea that poor people are poor because they don't want to work and they don't work and they're lazy, to our foreign policy that we can just cross our arms and stiffen our lip and Iran will come to the table and do everything we want. If we just hold out right. long enough, they'll just...
Yeah, and the thing that flipped me out the most was saying, you know, how come Africa isn't working, which is a variation on those black people, right?
No concept of history in that region. I mean, it's just... This is the thing that is so startling, is that so many people believe that.
Yeah.
It's not just that there's the few, you know, Rush Limbaughs and things like that that spew this stuff, but so many people believe it. And that's why we are where we are in this world, is because it's just the ignorance. It's not taking the time to actually learn what is happening and what has happened in order to move forward, but just to take these things on face value because, well, this guy's got a radio show. He obviously knows what he's talking about.
Right.
I mean, I love you, Tom, Randy Rhodes, all those guys, but everything that you say is verifiable through history, through you know, research into you know, government studies and things.
And,
like
and
that.
When I get it wrong, I backtrack and make it clear that I got something wrong, or at least I try to.
And nobody makes you do it. You do that on your own because you are an honest person and you are honestly trying to inform people. And that I think is the drop off between liberal radio and progressive radio and conservative radio. And I really appreciate your show, Tom.
Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Tim in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to chime in on or dovetail off your comments about healthcare and the economy. I find it always interesting that, like Mr. Schiff, they claim the importance of healthcare being 17 or 18% of the economy and how we can't let government take that over. And nobody ever asks the question, well, should healthcare be 18% of the economy, or should we actually do things that make money as opposed to making money off people's illness?
Right. You know, should manufacturing be 18% of our economy? I mean, you know, if when Reagan came into office, it was 35% of our economy. It's 11% of our economy right now. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Thank you so much, Tom. Have a great day.
Good point. Thanks a lot, Tim. Good point. Isaac in Windsor, Colorado. Hey, Isaac, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
Hold on. Well, you asked if there was any markets which were actually free.
Mm-hmm.
And my just one point was, back in college and all that, I smoked a lot of marijuana. And that was one of the free markets that I got to experience.
Okay, so you're saying that an illegal market, a black market, an underground market is a free market?
Technically, yeah. It's unregulated and...
Well, you still have to, you know, how did you pay for the pot? Did you use dollars?
Barter trades.
Yeah. Arguably, if it's...
I understand your point that, I mean, yeah, it's a slight overlap.
Yeah.
Out of all markets out there, it is one of the freest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to think on that one for a minute. Because I don't think that building an economy based on illegal markets is necessarily a good thing. And the fact of the matter is that most pot is paid for with dollars, and dollars are regulated, and there are rules, you know, that determine their value, and they're convertible into other things, and therefore that's not a free market. That's a, you know, because there's a vehicle within that marketplace that's heavily regulated, the dollar. And I think that your point, that's a market with very little. But let me flip that upside down. The fact that marijuana is illegal means that it is probably the least of the unregulated markets, the least of the so-called free markets, because any person cannot participate in it. In order to participate in that market, you would have to be willing to take the risk of going to jail, which means that the only people participating in that market by definition are criminals, and so that couldn't possibly by definition be a free market.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Am I making sense? Okay. So we got to find a better example, Isaac. We'll keep up the search. Good try, though. Thanks a lot for the and very good try. I mean, you know, you paused me there, stumped me for 30 seconds or so. I appreciate it. Al in Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Al, what's up?
One of the things that gets me is after the collapse, we're going to have half of the country trying to convince us that it was Barack Obama's fault. And everyone needs to understand that right now, as we speak, the Republican Finance Committee refuses to allow the regulators onto the market. They won't fund them. They're helping the rich people steal trillions of dollars from us right now as we speak.
Yep. You're right.
And after the collapse, when we find out that the United Law is such a hold over our politicians that we're not going to be able to re-regulate, we're not going to be able to tax rich people.
I mean, because of Citizens United, because the Supreme Court.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to turn things around. We're not going to be able to tax them at a higher rate to create jobs.
See, I think that can change. I mean, you know, Al, there was a time when there was another great injustice in this country, and that was that 18-year-olds were being drafted to go off to Vietnam to die, and they did not have the right to vote on whether or not that war continued. And the amendment to change the voting age from 21 down to 18 was introduced in March and was passed through the Senate in April or May and was passed by three quarters of the states by September of that very same year. The whole thing took about 6 months. I believe that when the crash happens, that when people have awakened to the horrors of this so-called free market, this unregulated market, the revolving door, the crony capitalism, the corruption in Washington, D.C., that is all the product of these doctrines created by the Supreme Court with their notion that money is somehow protected by the First Amendment as if it was speech, and the corporations are somehow protected by the 14th Amendment as if they were people. I think that when people realize that and they really get it in their guts, things will change. And I think that they will change fast. So I'm actually very optimistic that after the crash, we're going to see a radical and dramatic progressive revolution. Al, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're still in search of a free market. Is there any country, anywhere in the world, any place, any product where there's a free market? Anywhere? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. How you doing, Brother Sam? What's up? Sam? Gotta listen to your telephone, Sam.
What do you say there, Brother Tom?
Hey, Sam, I knew you were there.
Well, me and Tiger was fooling around here while I was waiting for you.
Okay.
How's old Higgins doing?
Higgins left this earth a week ago Thursday, or maybe 2 weeks ago Thursday, but he's...
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. He's in the light, and Louise already has her eyes set on another kitten, so, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well...
It happens. It happens. He had 15 good years, and we had 15 good years with him, so we got to be grateful for that and think of it in those terms. So
I like it because you're an animal lover. We need more people loves people as much as they do their animals.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I think we're still in a revolution about the free market and stuff. I mean, like back here in the 1700s, they had them companies, Virginia Company, Massachusetts Company, and all those, you know, that we broke away from the British rule. And now it seems like we got this other kind of rule we got to mess with to get fairness. We just need fairness to have a free country.
Yeah. You know, those,
I mean, people,
you're right.
People
those
say it's not free anymore.
Yeah. Those sort of state run companies. I mean, they were stock companies in many cases. The stock was owned by the aristocracy, the British aristocracy. They more resembled the big, you know, the large publicly held corporations of today than anything else. I think, you know, That would be a really good article or a really good book to draw those parallels between that time and this. I had not considered that.
Do an article, Tom.
Yeah, well, I need to do a little research on it first. You know, apparently you know more about it than I do. I can tell you all about the British East India Company, but the you know, the Virginia Company, the Massachusetts Company, I don't know that much about other than that they were there.
Well, I started thinking that the second time Reagan started running for president, it entered my mind.
Yeah.
Something was going on there.
Yeah. How's Point Pleasant, by the way? How's West Virginia doing right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, I got a story published.
Did you?
In the Charleston Gazette through that there, West Virginia hometown memories.
Good on you.
So, been working on 30-some years.
Yeah.
I like to write a book myself like you.
You write a page a day, you write a book a year, Sam.
Do that now?
You write one page a day. At the end of a year, you've written a book.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I need to do autobiography on about 12 characters to get the true battle of Point Pleasant, how the Indians tried to share the land, and the British came in on it. It's really complicated, just like Braveheart movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the politics, the Indians was in it. I'm telling you, Thomas Jefferson knew about it.
Yeah. So
let you go now, brother. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Louise and the whole crew there. God bless you.
Thank you. And back at you, Sam, and to you and your family. Thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. So it's always nice to hear from Sam. We've been hearing from Sam for a long, long time. Sam went through a rough patch there with a little bit of cancer. Sounds like he's on the other end of it. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We will be back with more of your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick with me. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and David in Germantown, Tennessee. Hey, David, it says you want to disagree with me. What's about what?
Well, I came in about halfway through your free market example,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like I looked up the definition of free market, and it didn't seem like it was the same as what you were talking about. You mean free as in like it's just of no cost or of no regulation?
Of no regulation.
Right, but it's a free market is any market that the government doesn't control the supply and demand or cost.
Well, I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but the fact of the matter is that as soon as you are using money, government is involved. As soon as you can sue somebody for ripping you off, government is involved. It's not a free market anymore. It's a regulated market. And that's why I said there's no such thing as a free market. Give me an example of a free market.
Our market is an example of a free market. Because just because it's not regulated, there's regulation in free market, you're framing the argument in an incorrect way.
Give me an example of a free market.
The U.S. market is a free market because you can bring things to market freely.
Okay, so let's take a product, for example. You're going to sell me a chair, okay?
Yeah, I'm selling a chair.
All right. And you're freely offering that chair at a certain price, and I'm freely buying it from you at a certain price. And, you know, I get that chair home, and I discover that you had represented it as a good, solid chair made out of maple wood, and actually it's made out of balsa wood. The first time I sit in it, it falls apart.
Right.
Should I have a right to come back against you for lying to me?
Absolutely.
Okay, then that's not a free market. That means that there is some regulation in that market. It means that the government has defined one of the rules of the game as that you have to fairly represent what it is you're selling. That's not a free market. That's a regulated market.
Well, you're selling your definition of a free market incorrectly. You're selling your definition of a free market as an unregulated market. The definition of a free market has nothing to do with regulations at all. You're framing your argument already.
Then why is it that every time I get one of these guys on who says that they want a free market, they say the way to accomplish it is to get government regulations out of the way?
Well, less. Government regulations, less.
So in your mind, a free market has a certain amount of regulation, but not a lot of regulation.
Of course.
So where do the regulations begin and end, and what makes it free and not free? That's my point. There's no such thing as a free market. There are regulated markets.
I can tell you.
Period.
You asked me a question. I can tell you.
Okay.
You asked me a question. You said what makes a free market a free market, and that's when you can bring products to the market, and it's not in control. The government is not in control of how much you bring and what the set of prices. That is the main. That's the only difference between the free market and a command market. So when you
if you're trying to compare if that's your definition of free market, in other words, your definition of a free market is the opposite of a command market, the opposite of basically communism, then we live in a perfect paradisical free market.
No. My definition of a free market is Webster's definition of a free market. I was just using the command because it's
well. I would submit to you that Adam Smith and others in the intervening years might disagree with Webster, although I don't have Webster in front of me. So, but the point is that when Republicans, by and large, are saying deregulate the marketplace, what they're really saying is the government should not have any say in how much poison the Koch brothers can put out of the smokestacks of their oil refineries, because they should be able to externalize those costs and cause as many cancers downwind as they want and keep all the profits themselves. That's generally, you know, when people are talking about free markets in code, that's what they're talking about. Or that Walmart should be able to come in and run companies out of business by dropping prices and enough to put the local department or, you know, hardware store out of business. And then once that hardware store is gone, raise the prices again.
I mean, that works perfect when you're looking for a perfect enemy. But that's not the actual case. I mean, 40% of the people in the country, 50% of the people in the country are conservatives. So they think they're either stupid or they're evil. That's not really how it works.
I don't believe that 50% of the people in the country are conservatives. And B, I don't think that there is any one definition of conservative.
There you go. Okay, well, great. We agree on that. But, I mean, as far as half the country being conservative, I don't see how
80% of the country thinks that we should have an existing or stronger Social Security system. Is that conservative or liberal?
Well, now that it's been in effect for 50 years, I would say that's a little bit of a gray area.
Okay.
It's going to be
over 70% of Americans and over 60% of Republicans believe that we should close the gun show loophole, and higher percentages than either one of those believe that weapons of war like AR-14s should not be offered for sale in the marketplace. Is that conservative or liberal?
That is both. Everyone I've ever spoken to believes you should close the gun hole loophole.
Yeah. That's the thing. You know, when people use these phrases, conservative and liberal, I think they're increasingly meaningless. And increasingly what it has come to mean is that conservative has been used to describe things that benefit billionaires and transnational corporations, and liberal has become to describe things that benefit working people and poor people, and people in the middle class, they're not really sure, you know, which it is and what it is and all that kind of thing. And although it seems like it's probably more liberal than conservative, I mean, can you give me, for example, any Republican or conservative policy that overtly and explicitly benefits the middle class?
The growth of the economy, I would think, by deregulation or less regulation of big business.
Give me one example of a regulation of big business that you would reduce that would grow the economy, because the last time I saw a major regulation deregulation of big business was when Gramm-Leach Bliley blew up the Glass-Steagall Act, and that deregulation of our banks led to a crash of our economy.
The first one off the top of my head is just over 50 employees. You have to provide health insurance with a new health care plan. That's horrible. Oh, you meant a conservative. Okay, you were looking for
looking for something that helps the average working person that Republicans are advocating. I don't know of anything.
It's usually just growth. That's basically what they're.
Yeah, but that's like saying I'm in favor of mom and apple pie. That's not a policy. It's a slogan.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartmann Program. Obviously, I am not Tom Hartmann.
Tom has an interview. He's doing one for his book. He has had lots and lots of interviews.
Danielle and Shano, Tom's associate producers, are here filling in for the next hour, and Tom will be back. So
yes.
If you're waiting, please hang on. Either we'll get to your calls or Tom will in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, we wanted to talk about the so-called Do-Nothing Congress. Back in 1947, the 80th Congress under President Harry Truman passed 388 laws, about 400 pieces of legislation.
Which was not that much, and they were called the Do-Nothing Congress as a result.
Exactly.
And how many have we passed in this Congress, by the way?
Under the 113th Congress of today, under President Obama, there have been a total of 49 pieces of legislation.
So that would be
passed.
A do-less Congress, even less?
I'm not quite sure of what we can call them, but we are going to speak with somebody who is an expert at all of this stuff. David Bender, the political director of Progressive Voices, you can check it out at progressivevoices.com, is here to help us figure out, David, what would you call this Congress if do-nothing is already taken?
Know-nothing.
Know-nothing?
Know-nothing. And it's already taken, but it hasn't been used since 1856, so it seems like the copyright is probably passed. I don't think Millard Fillmore or anyone is going to really object. If we call a Congress that is dominated by people who actually literally know nothing, they do not know what is causing climate change. They don't want to know. They actively don't want to know the truth about issue after issue after issue. They don't want to know that people need health care in this country. They have no solutions. They know nothing. And it is easy and facile and accurate to call them the party of no, but it should be K-N-O-W. It is the party of they don't know anything. And worse yet, they distrust science. They distrust facts.
Well, and they distrust.
That's what's driven this Congress.
Well, and they distrust government. I mean, they're constantly railing about the evils of government while trying to run it. On that note, you know, you have Republicans blaming Harry Reid for inaction, saying it's because Harry Reid blocks Republican amendments. And you, of course, have the Democrats saying that the Republicans' abuse of the filibuster is responsible. But what do you think is behind this political gridlock? I mean, can it really all be about hating President Obama?
Yes. let's just look at the numbers. Again, in the history of the Republic, half of the filibusters, and let us be clear that they aren't real filibusters because, as we know, the idea is that it was intended for people to take the floor and hold it. That doesn't happen. They just threaten to do it. But half of all of the filibusters in the history of the Republic, guys, have happened in the 5 years under President Obama. That is beyond comprehension. It's not a statistical anomaly. Any more than glaciers melting is a statistical anomaly. These things are real. This is all directed at keeping, for example, the federal bench from containing President Obama's appointees. Right now, the entire federal bench has 390 Republican appointees and 390 Democratic appointees. I think that number just went up with some of these confirmations post the end of the filibuster. But that's a dead split.
across the country. Now, there are 93, or were, approximately 90, let's say, vacancies. You do the math. That is a significant percentage of the court, a little better than 10%, I believe, that this president can fill in 3 years left on his term, 3 years that they would slow walk if Mitch McConnell and John Boehner had their way, Mitch McConnell particularly in the Senate, they would slow walk to the point where people withdraw their nominations. And these are people who have wide bipartisan support.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen several people, several, you know, very good, strong nominations that should have bipartisan support withdraw their own names because of this gridlock.
Well, they put their lives on hold to go through this process, Danielle. And what we need to understand is that your question, is this based on hating President Obama? Yes. Would it be true of any Democratic president? Yes, but there's something more visceral here. And the level of intensity, and certainly the facts bear it out. The numbers bear it out. This has just never happened before. We've never had, you know, Chuck Hagel was threatened. A Republican former senator was held up as an appointee to as defense secretary. This is, it's ludicrous.
Yep.
All of that being said, the filibuster is dead and buried for now. And I think what we're going to see, and a lot of people have been critical of Harry Reid, and I'm not saying that he hasn't accepted part of this whole game that's gone on is because the Republicans have ratcheted it up to DEFCON 12.
Well, but, you know, you say that the filibuster is dead. The nuclear option really only helps with presidential appointments and still, you know, not even all of them, nothing to help with Supreme Court nominees. How is that going to affect this hold on legislation on, you know, bill after bill, immigration, the ENDA, you know, one after another? Is it going to have any effect there just because Harry Reid went nuclear?
Well, we got ENDA, and we will, you know, the problem we have is that the House is, you know, John Boehner won't bring that to the floor. He won't bring immigration reform to the floor. We're at the place right now where you're absolutely right. Legislation is not affected by filibuster reform. And for the uninitiated and for the people who are smart enough to have their heads explode when they hear the word filibuster, this really is about letting the majority, who happen to be Democrats elected, pass or confirm appointees. And that's really what it's limited to right now, except for the Supreme Court. But I believe, I truly do believe, that they will see that once government starts working, and this is the bet, this is Harry Reid's calculation and Barack Obama's, is that if he's allowed to do his job and the government starts to work because people are filling these vacancies and actually doing the job of the executive branch, people will respond and they will see government working. There are 3 years for that bet to pay off. It's a gamble, to be sure. And if Chris Christie is president and the Republicans should manage to take the Senate in 2014, or probably less likely in 2016, but 2014, then, you know, we'll see if it was a bet worth taking. I believe it is.
I certainly do. I almost wonder, and David, you have such a vast knowledge of, you know, the inner machine of politics. Would it have been better for Harry Reid, instead of just going nuclear on nominations, but to say that if you want to stand up and filibuster and block legislation and keep America's business from getting done, you actually have to stand up there and talk?
Well, that was Jeff Merkley and Tom Udall's proposal of bring back the talking filibuster, which I think is absolutely a good idea. And frankly, When it moves to the next phase, when it's about legislation and not about a nominee, because there really are differences on legislation. The nominees, they all agree. There will be no one to talk, you know, in opposition to the judge who was just confirmed, who'd been appointed, who served in the George W. Bush administration. There wouldn't have been Republicans up there. Maybe Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
But on legislation, the talking filibuster may be Harry Reid's next card to play, because I think we're going to see an effort sometime sooner rather than later to end the filibuster on legislation as well.
I certainly hope that goes from your lips to God's ears. We're speaking with David Bender, political director of Progressive Voices. You can check it out at progressivevoices.com. He's going to be joining us for one more segment, so don't go anywhere. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and Tom will be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you call the do-nothing Congress if they've done even less than the do-nothing Congress? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Tom is stepping away for an interview about his new book, The Crash of 2016, which is available in bookstores now. And we are still speaking with David Bender, the political director of Progressive Voices. You can check it out at progressivevoices.com, and you can listen to them on Progressive Voices on TuneIn.
Yes, where Tom is as well.
Yes. David Bender, before the break, you were teasing us a bit. I don't know if it was intentional, but saying that Republicans would take back the House, take back the Senate in 2014. Do you really believe that they're going to do so? And if so, is this nuclear option going to come back and haunt Democrats?
Well, it's a gamble. Do I believe it? You know, it's very, very hard. I predicted accurately. As a matter of fact, I'm still waiting to collect on a bet with Rachel Maddow in 2006 that we would take the Senate back. And we did by 2,000 votes in Montana with John Tester, by essentially drawing to an inside straight. We had to pick up every seat. If the Republicans have the kind of year that they had in 2010, it's possible. There are some seats that are lost already. It looks like South Dakota is lost with the retirement of Tim Johnson. Montana is not looking good. The number of seats in play, oddly enough, the most vulnerable Republican, and again, the numbers don't work to our advantage, Shano and Danielle. It's we're looking at twice as many Democratic seats up as Republicans. It's always a third of the Senate, as was the case, 2 years ago. Now, we managed to be able to do magic, and we also had Barack Obama at the head of the ticket. We don't this time. In 2016, it's the reverse, two Republicans for every Democrat. So this is the firewall right now. I think we may lose some seats. It is possible if the Republicans do very well in turnout, and Mitch McConnell can hold the line with his $10 million in the bank, yes, it is possible. And there's some things that we don't know yet. There will be surprising retirements. There will be things always happen. On the other hand, the Tea Party is always out there to challenge Republican incumbents like Thad Cochran in Mississippi. May force him into an early retirement. And then frankly, it's likely they'll hold that seat as well.
Yeah, it was actually going to be my next question, is if the party infighting between Republicans and the Tea Party, kind of the old guard and the new guard, if you will, is that going to actually cost Republicans and split the vote? Or, I kind of get the impression that either they're going to go off, the Tea Party is going to go off and form a third party, or they're just going to take complete control of the GOP. Can't that actually work against Republicans?
Well, it has. Ask Senator Christine O'Donnell.
An Engel.
God, I can't even remember. What was the name of the woman who ran against Harry Reid?
Engel.
Anybody?
Sharon Engel.
Oh, I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. These were people who should not have won the nomination of their party and cost seats. That could happen again, no question about it. But, there is an effort right now to try and minimize that. We'll see how it plays out. The bottom line is it remains a question of turnout. And what the Republicans have done since sweeping state houses and governorships in 2010, in numbers not seen since the 1920s, is to make it much harder for Democrats to win, both at the House level and even statewide. Minimizing Democratic turnout is their goal, and it is not a presidential year. So This is where the Tea Party continues to have its influence and has the it has Mitch McConnell running scared. His opponent in the primary has millions. It was just announced today. He has millions of dollars. He's got somewhere between $1 and $3 million in his checking account. You always have to put a range down on your form. I would know what that number was if it was between $1 and $3 million, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I'd have a pretty good idea.
I would too.
Yeah.
But that's what's going on here. Yes, there's infighting, but at the end of the day, we're looking at people like Ted Cruz who can get elected. We're looking at a lot of very right-wing Republicans, writer and writer, who wind up winning some of these Senate elections.
But don't you think people are tired of that? And I don't even just mean Democrats or progressives, liberals, however they define themselves, whatever category they want to, you know, put themselves in. But people in general are tired of the political gridlock, tired of the Tea Party and Republicans dragging this country backwards. I mean, we're seeing huge protests in Texas over abortion, huge actions in North Carolina over voting rights and food stamps and unemployment. Can't that have a national effect in actually increase Democratic turnout like we saw in 2008 with President Obama?
It happens in presidential years. I would point to 2010 as the better example, a far worse example, obviously, in terms of the results. And that's the problem. Yeah, people are tired of the gridlock, but politics, was it Tip O'Neill who said all politics is local? This is a state-by-state situation.
Yeah.
And in a state where Scott Walker, who should have been recalled, was not, and is now positioning himself as a credible presidential candidate, the Tea Party is aptly named because we are Alice in Wonderland. We're through the looking glass here. We have gone down, you know, there are Mad Hatters everywhere, and it is one giant Tea Party, and that's what the Republican Party has become.
Well, David Bender, I always love talking to you, but you always harsh my hippie commie liberal buzz. Thank you so much. We really appreciate talking to you. David Bender, of the political director of Progressive Voices. You can check it out at progressivevoices.com. You can follow them on Twitter at Frog Voice.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We would still like to get your suggestions. What do you call a Congress that has done absolutely nothing? 866-987-THOM. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Obviously, we are not Tom Hartman. It's Danielle and Shano, Tom's producers here, filling in for the hour.
Fear not, he'll be back in about a half an hour.
Yes, he's doing an interview for his new book, Crash of 2016. And if you are in the D.C. area, come out December 3rd to hang out with Tom at Politics and Prose.
I know we'll be there.
Yes,
we will be there.
Before the break, we were talking with David Bender of Progressive Voices, and His predictions were just a bit grim.
The thing is that David Bender is amazing at his prognostication. He is way more often he's correct than incorrect. But the thing is not everything he predicted today is not a foregone conclusion, and we can use that information to arm ourselves in terms of getting out there and voting and dealing with the issues that's the way things stand today. And while it can get a little down when you hear those types of predictions, there's no reason to pack it up and go home and say to heck with this.
No, in fact, I think that those protests, like, you know, the Walmart strikers that we're seeing this week and what went on in Texas and North Carolina, I think it actually inspires more people to get out and get active, as Tom likes to say, mm-hmm. to go and occupy something, that they spark additional people to get involved and to try and fix the process. And that's what's really going to change things. And turn David Bender into a liar.
Well,
I only say that because he's a friend.
Yes, yes. And he may change his predictions. I think what we should do is work very hard so that those polls start going the other direction and races start looking different. And then we have him come back and give different predictions.
Yeah. And elect some real progressives.
No kidding.
Yeah. Speaking of elections and how they influence our court system.
Wow.
One of the big news headlines today, and Shane, you had a little issue with this, was that the Supreme Court was going to hear the Hobby Lobby case today, that actually wasn't entirely correct.
Well, there was a big announcement from the Supreme Court today when it comes to Hobby Lobby. We should probably explain for those who aren't keeping up with the Supreme Court, although most of Tom's listeners do.
Yes.
The Hobby Lobby case has to do with the Affordable Care Act. And there are certain corporations in this in the nation that are extremely that are saying they are extremely religious and they object to the Affordable Care Act because it mandates that insurance provided by employers must also include contraceptives, birth control, things like that. They say that the Affordable Care Act, therefore, because they are religious, it offends their First Amendment privileges to practice religion as they see fit. And this case has finally made it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court today finally said they will hear this case. So it's a big challenge. The last time it went before the Supreme Court was whether or not the Affordable Care Act on its face was constitutional, whether or not the mandate was constitutional. John Roberts said, yes, this is constitutional as a tax, that the Medicaid expansion was not constitutional. States had the option. That was the big case before, a couple years ago. Looks like this March, they will be hearing whether or not the ACA violates the First Amendment's freedom of religion.
But what's at stake here is more than just the ACA and just at whether or not insurance companies have to provide birth control. This is actually another corporate personhood case in disguise of whether corporations have the right to exercise religion, right?
No one disputes that individual people have the freedom to exercise their religion. Hobby Lobby is not, well, we don't believe, I don't think you do, Danielle, that Hobby Lobby is a person. It is a corporation. The question is, does that corporation, like in Citizens United, the Supreme Court said a corporation is a person and money is speech and there is freedom of speech, a corporation gets that freedom. Now, is a corporation a person that also gets the freedom of religion? So it's a corporate personhood case. They're trying to extend Citizens United so that the Bill of Rights applies to corporations. It's interesting, we were talking with Tom before the show about this, and Tom wondered if the Supreme Court might consider splitting the baby on this, that certain corporations would qualify and certain ones wouldn't, depending on the type of corporation. He was considering whether or not it was an S-corp or a C-corp, meaning I suggested perhaps a closely held corporation versus a public corporation, that a closely held corporation may be able to say we can exercise our religion and therefore we're exempted from the ACA, whereas a publicly held couldn't.
It's definitely something we're going to have to watch. There's a lot of details.
There are some nuance and some details. And the question is, how far can this be pushed? You know, we have a very pro-corporate Supreme Court right now. And it would not surprise me if they didn't extend beyond.
Yeah. Well,
take some calls?
Yes. On that note, we wanted to take some calls and speak with people who had suggestions for what we call... What do we call Congress? Do-nothing Congress is already taken, and the do-nothing Congress passed nearly 400 pieces of legislation.
The actual do-nothing Congress is a very high bar that this current Congress will never reach.
Right. So if that's already taken, we have to figure out a new name. I was thinking the 10 percenters, because they've passed only 10% of what the do-nothing Congress accomplished. Mm-hmm. That's my suggestion, but we're going to speak with Dylan in Lake Bluff, Illinois. Dylan, what's your suggestion for a name for Congress?
Honestly, I think either call them the Invisible Congress or the Missing Congress. Right now I am currently driving home from college, and the one thing that we're never allowed that, you know, at a really small school you're not supposed to do is, you know, it's one thing not to do your work, it's another just never show up.
Yeah.
The thing that I always angered me about, especially the House of Representatives right now, if I could just say something about them, is that, okay, I'll take that you are not you're not passing laws, but at the very least, you just show up for your job more often.
Yeah, I mean, they've had 19 days off just since, or 19 days off between the middle of November and the end of this year. You as a college student, even with Christmas break or holiday break, whatever you want to call it, I'm betting you don't get 19 business days off, do you?
weird situation with my school, but most of my friends don't.
Yeah. Well, the Invisible Congress, I think that's a great suggestion, Dylan.
Or along those same lines, that if you're going to equate it somewhat to school, they could be the incomplete. Because if you don't show up for enough classes in college, you get an incomplete. So it's the Incomplete Congress.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that they didn't accomplish this term was, in fact, reasonable, substantial student loan reform. And I'm sure that affects you personally. So, Dylan, thank you very much for the suggestion. We appreciate it. And we're going to check with Jerry in Long Island, New York. Jerry, what would you call the Do-Nothing Congress?
Well, I want to take a step further. In addition to what I would call them, I think that your suggestion of calling them the Do Less Congress is perfectly fine. Well, we can call them the Do Nothing Congress, even though the name has been taken, because they have really done nothing since Obama was elected to a second term. There's nothing of major significance that's been passed so far. But on the change of the filibuster rules, and that kind of ties into the whole issue of what we can do to end or change the Do-Nothing Congress, I think that the first thing we have to do is we have to end the filibuster of legislation, which this current rule change to the filibuster rule does not do. And I think that's highly problematic, because historically, over the last 50 years in American politics, the filibuster of legislation seems to have only been used to defeat either progressive pieces of legislation or progressive amendments to various pieces of legislation, and not conservative ones. And so, for instance, in the last 50 years, we've seen the filibuster used in the 1960s to try to block the passage into law of the 1960s Civil Rights Act. That filibuster was eventually broken, but we've seen this filibuster in more recent years successfully used to block in 2009, more recently, the filibuster was used to successfully defeat a Senate vote in favor of lowering the age of Medicare to 55. That happened in December of 2009. It was going to be amendment to Obamacare.
But
it got 59 votes. But
Jerry, if we were to completely end the filibuster, it is possible that Republicans are going to regain control of the Senate. In fact, it's likely at some point in the future. Don't you think that the minority does need some power to stand up to the majority?
Yes, well, that's why I think that in a way this was done rear end backwards, because I think that the current partial change to the filibuster rules is actually going to hurt Democrats more so, because if, God forbid, we get a Chris Christie elected or some other Republican elected president in 2016, the current change is going to make it very much easier for Chris Christie or any other Republican to get every nomination they want just rubber stamped through.
Yeah, and we certainly don't need any more court packing by Republicans.
And also, you could argue that this opens the door to, even if we don't change it on legislation right now, that the Republicans, when they do get control of Senate, say, well, you did it there, so we're now going to do it here.
Yeah. Do we have time for one more call, Shano?
No.
No? Okay.
We have about 30 seconds.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate everybody's suggestion, and I'm sure Tom will take some
he'll
of those
keep
as
going
well.
With it.
Yes. It sounds like something Tom would like to get your opinion on. We're going to speak with Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service in a little bit. There's so much news going on
so
today.
So it's the Do Less Congress. We can even call it the Care Less Congress.
Care Less.
It could not care less.
Could not care less.
Could not care less, Congress.
Yes.
There's lots of ideas.
Well,
also try on Twitter.
Considering that they are doing very little about people who are going hungry after the food stamp cuts, I think Care Less Congress is a good name for them.
I agree.
It certainly fits. Don't despair. Tom will be back very soon. But before he does get back in this chair, we're going to speak with Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. We'll be right back on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
There are some great suggestions on the board for what our listeners would call the Do Nothing Congress. 877. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. We should be joined momentarily by Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. Should we go to a call, Shane, in the meantime?
Probably not. We should say that Tom will be back soon.
Okay. Yes, Tom will be back next hour, and he'll be talking about the TSA. Have you been abused by the TSA? Well, it turns out there's an app for that, and Tom's going to tell you all about it next hour. In the meantime, Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service and goatsfortheoldgoat.com, the old goat herself. How are you, Ellen?
I am doing just fine, and actually not a lot of news today, but pretty significant news. I don't know if you've been talking about the Supreme Court decision. They are actually going to hear this case from Hobby Lobby and a woodworking group out of Pennsylvania. Both are owned essentially by families, although they are corporations, but they're not publicly held corporations. And the question is whether they can, because of their religious beliefs, opt out of paying for contraception and other kinds of things around that. So this is the big issue that is coming up now, and the Supreme Court decided to take the case, which they will take in March.
And there's some big implications to that case beyond just the Affordable Care Act. We were talking just a moment ago about how it's really also a corporate personhood case.
It is very much a corporate personhood case, and as you know, Tom has been railing about this corporate personhood ever since that crazy decision on the film, the Hillary Clinton film, et cetera. So this is really, it's another corporate person decision. Is a corporation have the same rights as a person, or does ownership and who owns the corporation relate to that?
Yep.
And that's the other big issue.
And what else is in the news? I know you said not a lot, but anything else going on
today? Not a lot. Oh, yeah, we've got a few other little items. One is that the president got a lot of grief, and Jay Carney tried to defend the president today. The president got quite a bit of grief on the issue of this guy Levinson. He was a former FBI agent. He was doing some business in Iran. He was taken. He has not been released by the Iranians. I'm not even sure we know too much about him or what he's doing, but the president was roundly criticized for not securing his release as part of this deal with Iran. A couple other interesting things, the tax-exempt issue, and this goes also to companies, nonprofits, or they're not nonprofits, they're 501c5s, they're called. 501c4 is a tax-exempt corporation, but either tax-exempt corporations, it is tax-exempt corporations, not 501c5s, 501c3s or 501c4s. It's 501c3s. They are very secretive. They have issued voter guidelines. They've done campaign ads. They're doing campaign get out the vote. And the Obama administration issued something today saying that they are now going to look at these guidelines for these companies to see, or these nonprofits to see whether they're really acting as nonprofits or is they're acting as secretive ways for people to put their money in, so that they don't have to show up on campaign contributions.
Yeah.
So that's the second issue. Yet another issue that has come up, and this is at the United Nations where I was today. This has to do with the Human Rights Committee. It was brought up by Brazil and Germany. It has to do with fine. And they have issued a report out saying that people have a right to privacy, that even though they know that this is not legally binding and will be voted on by the General Assembly probably next month, that this is a huge issue and they want people to know that governments they don't think have this right, either spy on other governments or wholesalely spying on their citizens. And last but not least today, the president was out at DreamWorks today. Of course, Jeff Katzenberg is a rather large donor to the Obama, but they were talking about economic policies and what things like the movie Shrek has done.
Well, the one part that always I never quite understand is why lawmakers, including the president, seem to consult more with corporate owners and corporations about economic policy than even sometimes about, you know, with senators and people like Bernie Sanders. Is that a misconception on my part?
Well, first of all, let's face it. As much as I love Uncle Bernie, as I call him, he's not a donor. And the fact is that these guys pay attention to their donors. Should they? No. Are you and people like me and Tom in favor of some form of public financing? Of course, because you need to take money out of politics. But right now, money is there, and they're going to pay attention to their donors, as bad as it is.
It's just frustrating to see, you know, corporate power being so close to the people who run this country.
It all comes back to Citizens United.
It does. Ellen, thank you so
much. And that is the case that they're looking at.
Yeah. And hopefully the Supreme Court takes this opportunity to rein it in, although I'm skeptical. But Ellen, thank you so much for joining me. I know I'm not Tom, but it's always nice to speak with you.
No, you're not Tom, but you're doing a great job.
Thank you, Ellen. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Remember, around the holidays, you can give the gift of a goat to help a former slave and... you know, it
Ellen
really
takes
goes
pictures
a long way.
And sends a picture of the slave you've helped, and the former slave you helped, and the goat and all that. It's really cool.
Yeah, it
and
absolutely.
That is a really good point about the what we were talking about when it comes to the Hobby Lobby case before the Supreme Court. It is an opportunity for the courts to actually rein in Citizens United a little bit. You know, so while we're talking about how they are very pro corporate, perhaps they've seen some of the error of their ways. I don't know. I want to remain optimistic about this.
I want to remain optimistic. I also, you know, perhaps if we put more public pressure like we did with DOMA.
Well, according to Scalia, public pressure does not matter.
It seemed to matter during DOMA. So, I don't know. Public pressure, public outrage that corporations are not people, money is not speech, and, you know, it's time for these justices to rein back those rulings.
I agree. And it's amazing. The UN finds a right of privacy, but Justice Scalia doesn't seem to find one in our Constitution. Think about that one.
It is definitely something interesting to consider. Tom will be back in just a few moments with Rajiv Singh, the director of law and policy of the Sikh Coalition. If you were abused by the TSA, it turns out there's an app for that. Stick around. Tom will tell you all about it next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. If you support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Back from the remnants of book tour. Did you all tell them where I was and what I was doing? Yeah, I had to stop out for an hour and do an interview and about the crash of 2016, which is great fun. I mean, I can kind of do an interview on it here. I do every day for 3 hours, and so we're having a fine time. But I'm back, and a lot of people with suggestions for the Do Nothing Congress. That'll be fun. But first, this is a serious and sober topic. Raj Singh is on the line with us. He's the director of law and policy with the Sikh Coalition. That's Sikh as in S-I-K-H coalition, SikhCoalition.org. Raj, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. First of all, for people who don't know what a Sikh is, would you like to give us a quick definition?
Sure. A Sikh is a follower of the Sikh religion. It's a religion that was founded over five centuries ago in South Asia. Sikhs are distinguished by turbans and uncut hair. And the Sikh religion is the fifth largest world religion.
Wow, the fifth largest. I did not realize that. I see a lot of Sikhs. Interestingly, I used to live in Portland. I used to fly through the Portland airport, and there was a fellow who was a TSA agent there who was a Sikh. And I had lunch with him one day, in fact. Very nice guy. It didn't occur to me at that time that being a Sikh might cause problems with the TSA. I guess probably because this guy was a TSA agent, you know, complete with turban. But that's not quite how it's worked out.
Yes. Unfortunately, in the post-9/11 environment, Sikhs have been subjected to violence and discrimination in the form of hate crime, school bullying, employment discrimination, and also racial and religious profiling. And racial and religious profiling tends to happen most often in the context of airports at TSA screening checkpoints. Unfortunately, Sikhs seem to be set aside for random secondary screening 100% of the time at some airports. Obviously, there's nothing random about that.
It's interesting. I got one of those. I just finished a book tour, and I went through, I don't know, 8 or 10 airports in the last week and a half and got pulled aside twice for, quote, random screenings. And but, you know, I'm an old white guy, you know, so I other than the fact that I usually, you know, look like I haven't shaved in 3 days, I'm not sure that I set off any flags. You're wearing a turban, and to somebody who doesn't have any religious sophistication, they might not be able to differentiate that from somebody who's Muslim. Do you think that's what's going on?
I think what's happened is that in the post-9/11 environment, the prevailing stereotype is that if somebody wears a turban and has a beard, they're associated with Osama bin Laden, who, of course, unfortunately wore a turban and had a beard. So I think it's really that's explaining a lot of these problems.
Yeah, so it's even more fundamental and basic than people can't tell the difference between Sikhism. How do you say it?
Yes, it's actually Sikhism.
Okay, Sikhism. The Sikhism is a variation of Hinduism, is it not?
No, it is not, sir. It is an independent religion, distinct from Hinduism and Islam. Essentially, Sikhs believe in one God and believe that all people are equal. There is no caste system in Sikhism, and there's also no belief in religious exclusivity. So as far as Sikhs are concerned, it doesn't matter what your religious label is. What matters ultimately is the content of your character.
But it came out of that region of southern Central Asia, did it not?
Yeah, the Punjab region of South Asia. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right. Forgive my ignorance. I really appreciate your educating me on this. So one of the cool things that you guys have done is come up with an app so that you can help educate the TSA about their agents who might not be, shall we say, behaving appropriately?
That's right. We have launched an app, which is free. It's downloadable on iPhones and Androids. It's called FlyRight.
FlyRight?
Yeah, FlyRight. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a 2.0 version of the app. We first launched it last year. And essentially what it does is allow any traveler to file an official complaint of mistreatment or discrimination against the TSA. What's different about the 2.0 version, which we just launched today, is that for the first time, travelers can send their complaints to their members of Congress automatically.
Whoa. And you don't have to be a Sikh to use this, I'm assuming.
That's correct. About half of the users of FlyRight in the last year filed on the basis of discrimination with respect to race, national origin, gender, and disability status. So it's not exclusively for Sikh travelers. It's designed to be used by anybody.
Yeah. And you said Sikh. So I'm mispronouncing the name of your religion. It's Sikh, not Sikh.
That's right. It's Sikh. The K and the H are kind of aspirated.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the points I want to underscore about this app is that Over the course of the last year, we've been collecting statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And what's sad and unfortunate is that there's a significant gap between what DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, is reporting to Congress in this context, and what we have learned through data collection with the app. In 2012, DHS told Congress and the American people that it only received 8 complaints, just 8 complaints of TSA-related discrimination at American airports nationwide. We registered and documented 157 complaints, which were sent to DHS, by the way. So it's going to be interesting to see how DHS reconciles the difference the next time it makes a report to Congress.
That's very interesting. My experience of TSA agents has been with one single exception of somebody who was just, you know, probably should never be given a badge and authority, has been by and large positive. Is that, but you said that 6 are 100% being pulled out and profiled. Is this feel terrible? I mean, can you describe that experience for me?
Sure. It's quite stigmatizing. What happens is if you go through a body scanner or a metal detector and you don't set off an alarm, if you wear a religious head covering, the official policy is that you could be set aside for random secondary screening at the discretion of a screener. And so as a Sikh who wears a turban, if you go through a body scanner or metal detector and don't set off an alarm, you should expect to be set aside for secondary screening no more or less often than any other traveler.
Mm.
But in practice, what we're finding is that this discretion is being abused by the TSA at many airports, and Sikhs are being set aside for secondary screening 100% of the time. And that is suggestive of profiling.
Mm.
And in fact, it's not just Sikhs. In the last 2-3 years, there have been credible reports of racial profiling affecting Hispanic travelers, African-American travelers at airports in Hawaii, New Jersey, and Massachusetts.
Hmm.
And so this is not exclusively a Sikh problem. It may be suggestive of a deeper problem at the TSA with respect to profiling.
With respect to persons of color as well.
Indeed.
Remarkable. Raj Singh, the Director of Law and Policy with the Sikh Coalition, the Webster site Sikh, S-I-K-H, coalition.org, and the app, is it Fly Right? Is there an S at the end? Is it Fly Right or Fly Rights?
Fly Rights with an S at the end, and it's free on iPhone and Android.
Great. Raj, thanks so much for dropping by. Good talking with you.
Thanks so much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We all need to learn more about our fellow brothers and sisters. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's pick up some phone calls here. This is Karen in Garner, North Carolina. Hey, Karen, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am fine, Karen. Thank you for asking. Good. I hope you are well.
Feeling good, struggling, but, you know, hanging tough.
Yep.
Under Pat McCrory's...
Oh yeah, you live in North Carolina. You have my sympathy.
Yeah, I figured it out. I'm getting food stamps. I'm a disabled single mom.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter and I get food stamps, and I figured it out. We get $1.30 each a day.
Wow. How do you eat on that?
Terrible. Yeah, for real.
How do you eat on that?
I spend my disability money on it.
Uh-huh.
But I tell you, like, the last week of the month is real hard, and we eat a lot of pasta and broccoli.
Yeah.
We're vegetarians, so we don't have the meat costs.
Well, that's good.
We eat a lot of fruits, a lot of broccoli and pasta.
Well, root vegetables are real good for you, and they're a little less expensive. Carrots, yeah. Potatoes, turnips, rutabagas,
vegetables,
beets. But
yep.
Yeah. Hmm. So, what's on your mind? Is that what you called about? You wanted to share that?
Basically, there's more on my mind, but
yeah,
it could go on for
an hour. Do you see any movement in North Carolina, if I may slightly change the subject, but I think it's broadly on the same topic. Your governor has turned down the Medicare or Medicaid expansion, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Do you see any popular pressure or any movement that might cause him to change? And are any of the politicians in your state pointing out that that money that the federal government wants to give to your governor for Medicaid is federal tax dollars that were paid for by citizens of North Carolina? It's your money that the federal government wants to give back to you. Has anybody pointed that out?
No. No, and they do not even bring it up on local news.
Huh. That's incredible.
I mean, it's just like people are being so lied to. It's scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, being on Social Security, disability,
mm-hmm.
as my only source of income,
right.
which is not my fault. I paid into it. I got ran into by an 80-year-old woman. I don't blame her, but, you know, it right. happened. It's scary to think that I might lose some of that money or all of it if we ever get a Republican president again.
Yeah.
And I pray to God people wake up and vote progressive.
Yeah. I think that's happening. I think all across
America. I think so too, Tom.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest symptoms of it is how aggressively the Republicans are having to cut back on the number of people who they will allow to vote. I mean, they wouldn't be doing this if they weren't losing.
Yeah, that's the only way they can win is by cheating.
Yeah.
And it's really scary because
yeah.
we've got Art Pope and the Koch brothers
yeah.
helping, you know, Pat McCrory's strings, his little puppet strings.
Yeah, Art Pope is your very own hometown Koch brother. Amazing. Well, Karen, I wish you the very best and you know, hope that you and your friends are all very politically active there in North Carolina because there's a lot of good work to be done. Thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And what do you call this Congress that won't do things? Well, Sranny has a suggestion in Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Sranny.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen to it all the time, and I love what you do, and I'm so glad that you have Bernie Sanders on and let him explain to the American people what's going on. I just love what you do.
Well, anyway, thank you. And by the way, I should yes. speaking of thanks, I need to thank Danielle and Shano and David Bender for filling in for me for that hour when I was gone. That was very, very kind of them.
Yeah, they were great and a lot of fun.
Yeah, good.
And interesting.
Good.
My suggestion is to call it Boehner's Boners. For the play on words, of course, that it is. But I'm appalled at how poorly he can, quote, lead that part of our government.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is rather shocking that, you know, 40-some-odd pieces of legislation and the do-nothing Congress was a couple of hundred. I mean, it is truly shocking. Sranny, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for the suggestion. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, you have a name for this Congress?
Oh, yeah, I have a couple of them. And, I got to see you at the Frugal Muse when you were in Illinois.
So, oh, great.
That was quite fun. Awesome. But so what is the opposite of pro? The opposite of pro is con. So what's
right.
the opposite of progress? Congress. Besides that, I also thought, well, you could also call him the non-gress, since, you know, nothing is getting done.
Right.
Or the House of Unproductiveness.
That's, yeah. Yeah. That's a little more pedestrian, but probably more clearly descriptive. Excellent. Marty, thank you for sharing those. That's a good collection. Mike in Chicago, you got some suggested names?
Yes, actually, I also have a couple. First one I was thinking was the do less than nothing Congress.
Okay.
And the other one was basically the good for nothing Congress.
Right. Right. Good ones. Good ones. Excellent. Mike, thank you very much for the call. Carol in Dillon, Montana, you have some suggestions?
Yeah, I got one. Call them the Poultry Guys Congress.
Oh, my.
The only time they show up is to create mischief.
Yes, and poltergeists show up to create mischief. Yeah, there you go. And they're probably getting more things done, or they're probably not getting as much done as dead people. I mean, it's amazing. Carol, thank you. That's a good one. Marcia in Anger, North Carolina. Marcia, you have a suggestion?
Hey, Tom, it's Marcia.
Marcia, my apologies.
I just drove into a terrible area for reception. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, great. Listen, I say paid in full because we don't pay for them, but more importantly, Congress is not really the issue. We are the issue. This is a experiment in self-governance, and we need to do something about getting people educated enough to know how to do that. I have a Facebook page. It's called 14th Amendment Equality Project. It's a very simple project. Once a month, we get together and we go neighborhood to neighborhood with flyers. We got lots of organizations that have lots of information, and we need to hand this stuff out to people. People don't even know that we vote. They think we vote once every 4 years. Mm. We have a lot of work to do. And y'all need to get in this group. Miss Lady from Karen from Garner, come on out here with me. I'm in Anger. I'll meet up with you. Let's get it going.
That's great. Marcia, thank you very much. And good on you for being out there and being an activist. That's wonderful. Kathy, in Morrow, Ohio, you wanted to talk about the Native American free market system?
Yeah. The free market system to me means free market. And the Native Americans, before us Anglo-Saxons came in, their example of free market was everybody do what they could do, everybody pitched in, everybody had what everybody else had.
In other words, it was community ownership of everything except those most intimate objects.
Exactly, and that's a free market.
I think you're right. I think that's probably the best description. Now, contemporary economists would probably refer to that as Marxism or communism. But the fact of the matter is that in small communities, and the Israelis have demonstrated this with the kibbutz and native communities, indigenous communities all over the world have demonstrated it with basically tribal-sized communities. If you have fewer than 150 people, roughly, communism is actually the most effective, most efficient, most humane, most successful, most multi-generationally long-lasting form of economic system that's ever been created. So I think you're right, Kathy. I think you're absolutely right. Thank you for calling and sharing that. That's brilliant. Ernesto in Imperial, California. You have a name for Congress?
Yes, I do, Tom. I have a couple of them. I was wanted to run them by you. One of them would be the Hate Obama Congress.
Yeah. Which, unfortunately, is
that's
true.
That's what they want to do. I know I called when then-Senator Obama was running for president. I called a lot of people from New Mexico. A lot of them were receptive. A lot weren't. But after he was elected, we all know that Rush Limbaugh, McConnell, everybody else wanted him to fail.
Sure.
So that's when they tried to repeal everything he tried to do. They've been obstructionist all the way through till now. And it's not going to change.
No.
So it's because they hate the president. Another name I'd like to give them is the Koch brothers Congress, because about everything they do is backed by the Koch brothers.
Yeah, it seems. It's, you know, increasingly, it's like every day we discover a new front group that we thought was some kind of independent grassroots group that has been funded by the Koch brothers. It's like, you know, it's they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And so
that's exactly right. And this one lady called it the Boehner's boners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't call him Senator Boehner. I call him Senator Boehner.
Yeah, well, you know, and arguably that's how his name would be pronounced if it was anglicized, but, you know, the obvious reference there is just a little too much for me. But Ernesto, I get it. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for those suggested names, and thanks for listening to the program in Imperial, California. We will be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. And don't forget our new book, The Crash of 2016, just came out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the Tom Hartman app is absolutely free. Listen to the show, watch the show, get our stack, all the links, all the blogs, everything. That is 1 week from tonight. Not tonight. Today is Tuesday, right? It is. It's, you know, I thought it was Thursday all day. And you know why? Because tomorrow's Bernie, right? And it's like, somehow I got it in my head, tomorrow, Bernie's going to be here tomorrow, today must be Thursday, but it's not, it's Tuesday. But a week from Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, we're going to be doing a book signing here in Washington, D.C. at Politics and Prose. And so that should be great fun. So anyhow, we're trying to figure out, what should we call this Congress? The Supreme Court, by the way, is taking up the employer's refusal to offer birth control pills. They're going to decide on whether or not Hobby Lobby as a corporation has the right to practice their religion. Seriously? No, I'm not making this up. When are they going to decide whether a corporation has the right to marry? And if they decide that at the federal level, and they can assign genders to corporations, could this be a backdoor way to get, you know, gay marriage in all states? Because corporations, like, to the best of my knowledge, they're all the same gender, aren't they? Or are they genderless? Which creates a whole new set of problems, I guess. And then what about, I mean, corporations don't die. It used to be, up until the 1890s, corporations could not be incorporated for more than 40 years in any state in the United States. They had to die and go through probate so that a corporation could not be used to build multi-generational fortunes, to become the landed gentry. But, you know, that died with the charter mongering era that John D. Rockefeller kicked off in the 1890s. And so now we have corporations, we have, you know, people using the corporate form to basically keep their fortunes in perpetuity and never have to go through estate taxes. And it's just, it's very, very strange. It's just totally out of whack. This is not what the founders envisioned. So anyhow, some of your thoughts on this. Carol, in Cornville, Arizona, you have some thoughts on what to call this Congress.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
I have comments on a couple of different things. On Kathy, regarding her economy, mm-hmm. I think that should be pure economy.
You mean she that was talking, this is the woman who was talking about in a Native American economy, basically, she called it a free economy because other than your most intimate of possessions, everybody right. owns everything collectively.
It should be pure economy.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to tell you, I am grateful because I just got half of my Christmas shopping done on your free speech website.
Mm-hmm.
I spent $62. I got about half of my list done, and all getting books from you.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you.
And I have a title for our Congress. It should be either Nazi Congress or Adolf's Congress or Hitler's Congress.
Oh, that's tough, Carol.
I know.
Maybe we could.
Hey, how true.
Yeah, but see, I'm concerned about diminishing the power of those words. Maybe the Mussolini Congress, kind of in between.
I'm with that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, or the what was the guy down in Chile, the Pinochet Congress, or something like that. Although they were pretty nasty guys. I mean, John Boehner, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't killed anybody yet. Although you can argue, I think, and you could make an actual serious argument that the policies of this Congress, which have been the Republican policies, which have been to cut food stamps and to cut unemployment benefits, have led to an increase in suicides, probably have led to an increase in homicides, certainly have broken up families, have destroyed young people's children's lives as their families have fallen apart around them. That's pretty – I don't know a word to describe that other than evil. So anyhow, Carol, thank you very much for the call. Gus in New York City. Hey, Gus. Class warfare?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Great. What's up?
So I found this interesting thing. It was in Counterpunch. And it's all about this new kind of sneaky branded content that they have on all the websites of, like, all the center-left media. We're talking MSNBC, Huffington Post, New York Times, Washington Post. Something that they call branded content is where they write articles, you know, for pay for advertisers, and they kind of slip in, you know, things that the advertisers want to say. And I was looking for some of the more egregious examples, and MSNBC's website is actually co-sponsored, they just relaunched their website, it's actually co-sponsored by the American Natural Gas Association, and
they're one of the regular sponsors for their TV show as well. I mean,
I know, and that's amazing, because between all the Walmart ads now and the hydrofracking ads, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a contradiction of what all the hosts are saying. I mean,
yeah.
Rachel Maddow is saying, you know, beware of hydrofracking, and then 2 seconds later, you're in the commercial, and they're saying hydrofracking is safe.
But isn't that kind of cool?
It's great.
It's been a lot of years since, in fact, it was back when I was on KPOJ that Walmart actually bought an ad on my show. And somebody called up and went, oh, my God, I just heard a Walmart ad on your show. And I was like, you know, isn't it funny that they're paying us? I mean, you know, Vladimir Lenin said the definition of a capitalist is the man who will sell you the rope that you're going to use to hang him. And I don't, you know, if the editorial content of any network, I don't want to uniquely pick out, you know, MSNBC, but if the editorial content of any network is skewed because of their advertisers, then I would have a real problem with that. And but, you know, to the best of my knowledge, that's by and large not happening. It might be happening in some networks and in some places because of the ownership, which is a whole completely different issue. And it's one of the ones where I feel completely liberated, because the only people who own this program and own 100% of this program are myself and my wife, Louise. That's it. What's wrong with taking money from Walmart and then using that money to tell the truth about Walmart?
Well, I feel that I would never want to associate with Walmart. I've been boycotting Walmart for about 15 years. I won't step in the store, and
yeah.
I wouldn't take their money, because
yeah.
I feel like they're draining all of the localities, and they're making all the supermarkets and hardware stores close down and kill jobs.
See, I think it's just a bad investment on their part. But, you know, who am I to say? I don't know. Gus, you have raised one of the great existential questions that every talk show host, has an opinion on and sometimes struggles with. Thanks a lot for the call. I don't have an easier, glib answer for you. Bill in Oak Forest, Illinois. Hey, Bill, you got a name for Congress?
Yes, sir. The Catatonic Congress.
Catatonic, yes. And actually, we had three cats. We have two cats now, and I guarantee you we've got a new one coming. Louise has her eye on this kitten. And the cats do more than the Congress did. I mean, just with regard to the litter box, the cats do more than the Congress did. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Demetrio in Loma Linda, California. You have a name for Congress?
Yes. I thought since they're pretty much own and supporting the corporation, you call it the corporate Congress.
The corporate Congress. That's an excellent name. That's a very good one. Demetrio, thank you for the call, and thank you for sharing that. Cliff, listening on Progressive Voices in Bothell, Washington, you have a name for the Congress?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple. I started out with the worthless Congress,
mm-hmm.
but worthless implies some worth. So that didn't work.
Well, and also, you know, this is the first House of Representatives to have more than 50% of their members be multimillionaires in the history of the world, in the history of the United States. So they're actually damn rich guys, you know, and women.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
In substance, they're pretty worthless.
Yeah.
But what I finally came up with, the less than nothing Congress.
Less than nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Marcells, Illinois. Hey, Bob, you have a...
Yeah, boy, I just drew a blank. But if I had to have a direction as to where to go look, I would think of the Shrink's notebook, the DSM.
Yeah, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. If you were to look in the DSM for the typical member of Congress, I think probably you would find some. If you looked under narcissistic personality disorder, you would find something that probably most closely describes many members, and particularly in the Republican Party of Congress. Bob, thanks for that. Donald in Aurora, Illinois, you have thoughts on Congress?
Well, yeah, the name I got can't be said on the airwaves. There's too many swear words in it.
Okay, well, let's not do that.
Yeah, so the thing is, the only thing I can come close to is the Skid Row Congress today, because it's loaded with a bunch of bums.
Well, and the flip side of that is they're trying to turn us into Skid Row. I mean, look at what they've done to the American middle class. 32 years now, and the American middle class has gone from being one of the richest middle classes in the world to being impoverished. People used to have equity in their homes. They don't. People used to own their cars. Now they rent them. People used to, you know, their kids used to have, you know, be able to start their lives with no debt. Now they're starting their lives with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. I mean, this is the Skid Row Congress because they're throwing us all on Skid Row. I'm with you, Donald. That's a good one. Thank you very much for the call. 15 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We will be back right after this. Just a quick note, quick programming note as it were. My brand new book, The Crash of 2016, is just now, I mean, well, last week, hitting the bookstores and libraries, too.
You're
for free.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I strongly encourage you to read it for free at your local library. Crash of 2016. Welcome back. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, you have a name. I'm still waiting for the transaction tax. Really?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm waiting for.
Okay.
Because I got a name for the Congress.
Okay.
The Swamp Congress.
Swamp?
Yeah.
As in somebody ought to drain the swamp?
Nothing moves and it stinks.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Yeah, that's very evocative.
Nothing moves out of the swamp.
Yeah. That.
The transaction tax. Here's my gripe, right? When I buy an insurance policy, I got to pay a premium.
Right.
I'm an insurance policy for the stock market. When a bank crashes because of faulty investments and risky investments, they come to me, the taxpayer.
Right.
Say, you got to float me a loan. Right. I'm an insurance company for you.
Right.
So where's my premium?
Right.
My premium is the transaction tax.
Well, that's not unreasonable.
If you want me to back you, you better pay me a premium.
That's not at all unreasonable. And the fact of the matter is, you know, about 70% of all trading right now is done by machines that are trading a million trades a minute or more. And if we got that out of there, you'd get a lot of volatility out of the marketplace, and the marketplace might actually be something that worked for the people and for the investors rather than just for the billionaires on Wall Street. I'm totally with you, Corky. The Robin Hood tax, as Tim Carpenter refers to it, we need to do it. Thanks a lot for the call. Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Tom, I have a name for the Congress.
Okay, go for it.
All right. You know, they're very smart. These are very intelligent people, so I don't want to put them down. There was an ancient group of gods that came out of ancient Sumeria known as the Anunnaki who enslaved the people who had ownership over the people in the history of the world. They had ownership over the people and used them to mine all the resources for them because it was too much work for them. So I say we called them the Anunnaki. And by the way, the star turned upside down in the Republican the Republican logo, it actually does represent a god that came out of ancient Egypt.
Oh, that's interesting. Which god?
Well, it's an ancient Phoenician god, the goat. It was the god of the goat. It's the goat head, and right at the top of my dome here, I'm not quite sure, but
yeah.
If I talk to you again, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, okay, cool. Michael, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Mark in Soap Lake, Washington. Mark, you have a suggestion for the name of the Congress?
Yeah, hi, Tom. How about the Phantom Congress? I can't see any proof that they exist.
Well, and they don't even show up. I mean, they're not here now, to the best of my knowledge. It's
right.
You know, Boehner's got them working 3 days a week. Nancy Pelosi at least had them working 4 days a week. And, you know, it gives them three 4 week long vacations.
Nice gig.
I'm sorry?
I said, nice gig.
Yeah, nice money for $180,000 a year, plus health insurance, plus you got your own gym, plus you got your own dining room, plus you got your own, you know, underground public transportation, plus you get to go to fancy parties, plus
I can afford them.
I mean, you know, plus you can take a junket and you know, what was this guy, Congressman Steve Pierce? He just spent $20,000, your and my tax dollars, going to Egypt with, you know, and then he voted to cut food stamps to the people in his own district. That $20,000 could have fed a lot of people. I mean, it's incredible. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour. Your media support group for We the People. Shano says the Caucus Room Congress. It's really what it is. I mean, this all came out of the Caucus Room conspiracy January 20th, 2009, the night that Barack Obama was sworn into office. He and Michelle were out dancing at the balls, and along with Joe and Jane. Jane Biden? Is that his wife's name? Jill. That's right. Jill. Thank you. Joe and Jill Biden. And I was there. I danced with them, sort of. I mean, I kind of stood around the edge. I don't dance much very well. But in any case, while that was going on over at the caucus room, you had people like Jim DeMint next door here at the Heritage Foundation and Pete Sessions and Paul Ryan and sitting around saying, okay, how do we destroy this man's presidency? And they have been damn successful. So anyhow, names for it. George in Chicago, you have a name for this Congress?
I have several, Tom, actually.
Ones you can say on the radio, though?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Strictly speaking, the term Congress refers to both houses of the national legislature, and the Senate, while sluggish and unproductive, has not been despicable and dangerous as the House has.
Yes.
And keeping in mind that the first person who makes a Nazi or Hitler reference loses the argument, I had to discard my first choice, which was HOH, the House of Hitler. But I think Daddy Bush gave it away back in the day when he talked about the New World Order. So I would say either the Jackboot Congress, the JBC, or I would say, in reference to Stephanie Miller's joke about Obama derangement syndrome, the Obama derangement Congress.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. Thank you, George, for that. That's an excellent one. Leslie in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you have a suggestion?
Yes, I would like to suggest the Congressives.
The Congressive.
As opposed to Progressives.
Ah, excellent. The Congress, a very, very good one. Leslie, thank you very much for that. Dan in Colchester, Vermont, you have a suggestion?
Yes, I have one. It's called the Sons of the Confederacy Congress.
Well, you got it. I mean, that's brilliant. That's a good one, too. Thank you, Dan, for that. Jeremy in Parachute, Colorado, you have a suggestion?
Yeah, well, I kind of figure, you know, let's see, a place run by a drunk and has freeloaders and drug addicts in it. How about the Flop House of Representatives?
Oh, that's so close to the truth, it's scary, especially if you've read Bob Day's book, Sideswiped. Jeremy, thank you for that. Terry in Silver Springs, Nevada. Hey, Nevada. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I cannot top that one, the Flop House.
That was a good one. That was definitely a good one.
But I wanted to ask you about the birth control that's going up before the Supreme Court. During the big drug war push, I think it was during old man Bush's time, that they didn't seem to have the right-wing religion people didn't mind that the Native Americans lost their sacred peyote ceremony.
Right.
I mean, they snatched that right away.
That's right.
Where was their outrage then? Yeah, that's all I wanted.
Okay.
I wanted to bring that up because I think it was during the first Bush. So
I don't recall when it was, but I know that there was. Was that the Supreme Court or was that Congress? I don't know how that played out.
I can't remember. I was kind of hoping you would, and that's what I was thinking. You know, I know it came out of the right that they didn't.
Sure. Yeah. How dare people do anything other than drink alcohol? It's amazing. Okay. But you didn't have a name for Congress.
Oh, let him die, Congress.
Let him die, Congress, of course, yeah. In the spirit of Ron Paul. Terry, thank you very much for the call. Robert in Gray Court, South Carolina. You have a name for Congress?
Yes. The welfare cheats.
The welfare cheats.
Money off the government and don't do anything.
There you go. That's a good one, Robert. Thank you very much. Natalie in Lafayette, Alabama. You have a name for Congress?
Yes, I was thinking the CACO Congress, like cacophony or cacography, which means bad.
Right.
They're like the bad Congress, kind of like spirits, bad spirited Congress.
Yeah.
And I also have another one. We also have in this country caco demonic economics.
Caco-demonic.
You have the animal spirits of economics.
Yeah.
Now our animal spirits, they're demonic.
Oh my. You've out intellectualized me. That's a good one, Natalie. Thank you very much. Chuck in Mosier, Oregon. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Tom. How about the Alfred E. Newman Congress?
What? with the official logo could be Quid me anxious sum, which is Latin for what me worry. Yes. Yeah, that works for me. Chuck, thanks a lot for the call. Jerry in Kansas City, Missouri says you wanted to make a negative comment about my book. Really?
Well, I called yesterday and you kind of just didn't answer my question.
Okay.
Both Republicans and Democrats take money from Wall Street and billionaires.
Yes.
Take Obama, George Soros, the Pritzker family. Most New York investment banks are Democrats. And so when you're talking rich people, you're talking more rich people support the Democrats than the Republicans.
Generally speaking, that's certainly how it worked in the 2008 election cycle. It's not how it worked in the 2012 election cycle. But I don't disagree with your premise. What's your point?
Well, the reason I called is I asked you about the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank, which is one of the biggest costs to American taxpayers. It benefits a small little group of people. And like I tried to get yesterday, I asked you a question. Don't you think when you write a book about economics that we should discuss the elephant in the room, which is the biggest cost to this country, is the interest that we pay?
Did you know that the Fed donates the interest profits back to the Treasury every year?
But who owns all that? All that money, the Federal Reserve is also owned by the International Bank of Settlements.
No, it's not. The Federal Reserve is owned by the 12 member banks, and they're owned by their member banks. But the profit that the Fed makes on holding treasuries is returned to the Treasury at the end of the year. So it's not quite that simple, Jerry. But we'll live to debate it another time. We got to wrap up. Coming up tomorrow, a special holiday week edition of Brunch with Bernie, America's Senator. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here for Brunch with Bernie on Wednesday, plus Mike Papantoni of Ring of Fire Radio. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, get to a library and read The Crash of 2016. I think you'll like it. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.